This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
What up? Oh, all right. I'm just on one today. I'm sorry, guys.
And Brock Rahm.
Cool. That absolutely makes sense. You can absolutely do that.
Well, there's Brock's intro.
Happy New Year. We hope you all had a great end to 2020. Well, the New Year's often a time to reset and lay out new goals. So today, we're going to talk about a six-part framework that you can use to focus on improving in 2021.
Do you all want to clap on five?
Yep.
Nope. We're going to do the next five.
Sorry, I thought you meant 05.
05.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
You hanging out with Dad?
How are you?
Oh, I'm good.
Today.
That's awesome.
Are you going to stay here? You are?
Okay.
All right. We've got an unexpected guest on the podcast.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com.
I am so tired of the types of creatives who jump to call people stupid or laugh at them for anything they don't understand or mislabel about creating content, like today's NFL camera shot. There's too many people who think their shit don't stink and it hurts our industry.
Yeah, I think that tweet from the Washington football game shot that you mentioned towards the end of 2020 there kind of leads directly into our conversation today. You know, heading into 2021, you know, people will want to reset and, set some goals for themselves. And so one of the topic that we wanted to talk about today to focus on is just improving and focusing on what you can do to get better as opposed to being good. And I think what the tweet kind of exemplifies is this idea that being good means that you need to talk down to other people or highlight what they don't know to make yourself feel better or anything like that. So, just focusing on what we can do to improve. And that's really what we're trying to do and assist with here and having conversations.
Well, and to be clear, like I want to give a little bit of context to that tweet. You know, when I tweeted it on, December 20th, on the day that everyone was talking about that shot in the Washington NFL game, there was a lot of good-hearted stuff that was like laughing about everyone talking about it being 8K and, you know, that being this like crazy wizardry. Like there was some funny stuff that like I favorited that I was like, I laughed at. Like it's not that like talking about that in a way of like, I can't believe they don't know this. Like if you're joking and you're lighthearted about it, like great. But there were so many people I saw that were like, I can't believe that people don't understand. This is just depth of field. And there's no way that's 8K because this camera only shoots in 1080 or it transmits. Like, listen, I don't know anything about like physics. I don't know anything about like street grids. I don't like, if you asked me to opine about those things, I would sound stupid too. Like as creatives, I hear so many people complain that like, we don't get the attention that we deserve. And that like, you know, when we're creating the content, the brands are the ones getting the attention. And like, I get that. But then when people are excited about creative and excited about like what's happening, it's frustrating to me to see people turn around and then like make fun of the people who are then excited about something that's happening in our industry. And I wish people were more positive about it. Like I thought, you know, there were a number of people that came out and did a fantastic job in explaining, Brandon Costa, I thought he was fantastic from SVG. Like, he kind of went through and talked about like what it took to do that and explained it and broke it down and what the technology was. And like, it was just a total explainer like feel. And like, that's what you need. Like explain to people, if people are excited about it, like encourage them to find out more rather than tear them down for being stupid, for not already knowing. And I think that goes far beyond this one instance, which is why it kind of set me off and made me so frustrated. It's something I see in the industry a lot.
Yeah, one of my least favorite things that people can do is gatekeeping, you know, and making people feel stupid or insignificant for trying to learn something or not knowing something. We've all been at a point in our careers where we didn't know something. There's plenty of stuff that I don't know, even on the technical side, and that's my full-time job. But, you know, it's, you know, if you can teach somebody, like you said, Garrett, or educate somebody on, you know, why they might be mistaken or if they're looking to learn something, you know, that's a lot better than doing this gatekeeping type. You're not allowed in my private club because you don't know this. But if you don't know it, then how are you ever going to learn it if you can't get into the club, right?
Yeah. And I mean, listen, I get that, like, it's something to laugh about as creatives when people are talking about, like, all of this next gen technology. Like, it's funny when the brands are putting that into it, like, you know, ESPN and Fox and NFL themselves, like, use language that didn't make sense for this in their tweets. And, like, I'm sure those are written by social media managers that also have no idea about this technology.
Marketing buzzwords are always going to get out there. I think back, I was actually watching a documentary just the other day. I think back to the Sega Genesis when they used blast processing in their marketing, but blast processing wasn't a thing. It was just something they made up in marketing. Like, those buzzwords aren't going away. 8K is obviously a real thing. There's a big difference there. But, you know, 4K sounds better than 1080, and 8K sounds better than 4K, and 12K sounds better than 8K. So if you have the opportunity from a marketing standpoint to throw those words out there, you're going to do it, because I know we're all creatives and we're in the industry and we understand that it's an A7 R3 or whatever the camera was. I didn't even look at it and it can't do that. But my dad, who's, you know, 68, doesn't care. No, but he knows 8K. He understands 8K, right? You know, so
8K is more than 4.
8K is more than 4. You can't argue with science. So
I said, I don't know much math earlier, but I know that math.
So you can't get upset when somebody who's a social media manager or whatever uses buzzwords, because even when they're wrong, sometimes, you know, it's still their job to get engagement and clicks and promote what you're doing. I don't see a ton of, it's not like that tweet came from the EIC of the truck doing the show, you know, that'd be a different thing.
I mean, it's just, and it's one of those things where, like, people weren't even that concerned about, like, whether it was 8K or 4K or 1080 or any of, like, all the people knew was that it looked cool. And, like, I mean, most of the people that saw it are probably seeing it on Twitter. Like, obviously there are plenty of people watching it on linear on the television, but, like, with the compression, with the, like, resolution, you're getting it on social media. Like, they're not seeing it in any of those resolutions anyway. So, like, let's not talk about what resolution and the compression and, like, all that stuff. Like, let's talk about how damn cool that shot was. Like, it looked good. Like, there are reasons that like, maybe I wouldn't take it live and, like, you know,
right,
the risks, and, like, you can talk about all those things.
There's an artistic discussion to be had there. Right.
Of course. But, like, from the consumer perspective, like, the people that we're talking about not understanding that, like, they just said, whoa, this is different. Whoa, this is unique. And I like it because of that. And instead, what a lot of people took from that as creatives were like, well, yeah, but it's not that big a deal. We've been doing it for 15 years.
Sure. But I'm glad it happened, because I firmly believe that the industry should be heading towards Super 35 broadcast, which Super 35 sensors or the A7 R3. Don't quote me on this. I think it was an A7 R3. Again, I don't know a ton about this tweet. I just saw it at a glance, sure, and saw the camera.
I'm pretty sure you're correct.
The A7 R3 is a full frame sensor, right? Let me hold on. Quick live Google here. Don't edit this out. It's a full frame sensor. Yeah. Full frame, I think, might be pushing it a little bit, but Sony has a camera that's maybe the best broadcast camera. One of the best broadcast cameras I've ever seen in my life. In their 4800, the HTC 4800, which is a Super 35 PL mount broadcast camera, that does high frame rate, ultra high frame rate. And, it looks unbelievable for the same reasons, right? You get that shallow depth of field. You get that tack sharp focus. Now, I don't think a lot of people totally know why here on the cinema side, sensors have gotten bigger and bigger. And cinema uses and feature side uses larger sensors versus sports, which is primarily stayed 2/3. And a big reason because of that is in sports, it's with all the movement you have, it's more advantageous for you to have a deeper depth of field, right? And have more in your plane of focus that can be in focus at the same time. Whereas on a PL mount, even like a CineZoom lens at, you know, at 120 on your lens throw, your focus is going to have to be so tack sharp. It's hard to keep those things in focus. Now you can do more with that. If you have enough light, you can stop it down to decrease that depth of field, but then you kind of lose the point of it. But I think in general, we're going to find a happy medium someday with Super 35 sensors in broadcast, with operators, with, you know, better monitors and better equipment to help them focus with something that tack sharp. Where on a feature set, you know, when you're doing an interview, Garrett, you know, and you guys are using your Sony FS5s. Is that what you guys use?
I mean, it depends. We freelance out a lot of our stuff. So right. It, you know, I would say the most common is probably the F55.
Sure.
We get some Amiras. There are some FS7s as well, but yeah, I mean, sure. that kind of thing.
Sure. F55, Amira, both Super 35 cameras. You sit somebody down for an interview. You have that tack focus. You know where they're at. You can punch in and get it. When you're covering a game, you're not covering it live, so not every single shot has to be perfect and in focus. You want to get as much as you can, but if you miss focus on something, it's like, it's okay. We have the broadcast cameras. We have another shooter over there. We have this. We have that. Whereas in a live scenario, getting that shot in focus is a little bit more critical for the coverage of the game. But I do think there's a world, and especially hopefully if people say they like this, where we can move towards larger sensors in the overall broadcast field. Garrett, I know that's really what you wanted to talk about when you brought this tweet up was...
Hey, I'm for it, man. Like, I just wanted to talk about the shots in general, because, like, I mean, the reason that I tweeted that was because I also shot, like, thought the shots were cool and unique and, like, something different. And, like, I
was so confused when I first saw it, right? Because you see, if I would have just saw that shot, I would have been like, oh, okay, somebody's running out there with a gimbal, you know?
Yeah.
You know, cool. But when I saw the touchdown graphic over it and the lower third score bar before that, I was like, whoa, wait, what? Like, I had to, like, you know, double or triple take. And like you said, you could have a bigger, I would personally think like, oh, I'd want more cameras than that to be with that sensor size before I took it, right? Because you could have a little juxtaposition there, or, you know, color variance within the sensor, that sort of stuff. But overall, I like it when people try new things in covering sports, because we've covered sports basically the exact same way we have since the 80s, right? Not a ton has changed. It's like when I think I've talked about it on this podcast before, I actually directed the first ever side sky game in football history. We did it for our Notre Dame spring game, and people hated it. Like, understandably so. I don't think it worked. But I'll always commend NBC for trying something different, because everybody's so afraid to, that you just think, oh, well, we found the formula to covering sports, which is probably true to an extent, but it doesn't mean that you can't try and find something new and find something innovative that might be the next big thing, or might give a perspective or an angle or a creative take on something that totally catches on. Because that's how we got, you know, the Skycam and the Steadicam in the first place, from the XFL and being on field with that stuff. So I love it when broadcasters are willing just to throw stuff at a wall and just see what happens.
Well, and you know, I think the other thing on the technical side that'll help that become possible is just, I mean, we continue to see autofocus, you know, improve and improve and improve. And it's still not to the point, you know, you could see it coming in and out. And I don't know if that was autofocus. I don't know if it's the guy pulling focus, and it's such a tack sharp, you know, a razor thin depth of field that he's coming in and out. But like, you know, if autofocus continues to improve and continues to grow, like, especially for that kind of shot where it's just like a celebration, it's not a ton of movement, like, it's a perfect, I mean, use for it. If you can get autofocus to a point where, you know, the guy's not worrying about pulling focus as he's getting that shot, and he's just moving and letting it go. I think that's something that's I've been super impressed with over the last few years. Watch that improve and improve. Like the idea of autofocus on a video camera, you know, in sports sounded insane, you know, 15 years ago, and you're right. Seeing it all the time now.
I still don't know if I could bring myself to trust it, but I hate it. That's more of me being an old school shooter, you know, yeah, like 100%. I want to control it and I'm better than the autofocus. But you're exactly right. At some point in time, that technology is going to cross a bar. It's kind of how I feel with, I don't know if you guys are car guys, but they don't make the new Corvette in an automatic or in a manual, right? It's kind of the same thing, right? Stick shift. Because they basically have just said the computer is going to shift faster and more precise than you, right? And it's finally caught up to that because humans couldn't do that forever. I'm probably saying that now and somebody's gonna be like, actually, there is a manual variant. But this isn't a car podcast. Who cares? But the overall concept is that computers have gotten so good at shifting a transmission, they can do it better than a human and more precisely. And I think we're going to get to that point with focus as well.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years ago when we got our first camera that had the dual pixel autofocus on our C300 and running that in an interview. Nothing like it. You know, it was awesome to be able to go shallow depth of field and do that. I drive a stick shift, so I think there I have a really old car. And my left foot usually really hurts by the time I get to the office. So, fully on board with an automatic, especially if it's faster.
I mean, turning this into a podcast about cars now, I want to know what you drive that you have a stick shift.
You don't want to know. It's from 2010.
That's not bad. I drive a 2010.
It's a Toyota Matrix.
I got a 2010 Ford Focus, man.
Yeah, I got a hatchback. It does very Ooh. Poorly in the snow.
What are you going to do?
And that's about all I know about cars. So
yeah, that this has maybe been we should come back cars.
To, yeah, maybe we should come back to production. So the 6-part framework that we're going to talk about today is actually built off of Elephant. So let me give you a little bit of a background of how that came to be, because I built this framework a couple of years ago, and I felt like it was something that we could discuss here, because I often get questions, and I've gotten this question a lot lately about, hey, what do you look for when you're hiring, or what can I do to set myself up for success? So I always lean on the 6-part framework to explain what the types of people that I like to work with, and try and give a perspective of to somebody about what I value. And so that's kind of where all this came from. When I was building this, I had two young kids, and I was trying to wrap my head around failure, because failure is a big part of growth and success. And my youngest son was very into vacuums, and he got a little Tykes vacuum when he was 2 years old, and the vacuum had these colorful balls that made up the trash or what is discarded, right? And that totally changed my perspective. You turn it on and the colorful plastic balls just start spinning around, and I was like, you know what? That actually makes a ton of sense, right? That's kind of what we're trying to highlight, is that the failures or things that were once garbage actually are what build up and make you successful. A lot of times it's failure first, and then you understand and grow and develop and move on from there.
That's a great way to look at it.
So how did this get to become Elephant Process as part of that? Well, we went to the Omaha Henry Dorley Zoo and back home visiting family, and we start to walk up to the elephants. And as we approach, I'm carrying my 2-year-old, and he points at the elephant and goes, vacuum. And I stood there for a second. I was like, wow, he's right. That's awesome. So I came back and I actually started going on National Geographic and researching elephants. So let me highlight what I learned in doing some research on National Geographic. Outside of being enormous yet majestic, Elephants are 1 in 5 mammals that can recognize themselves in a mirror. That's humans, great apes, dolphins, magpies, and elephants are the 5 mammals that can do that. Their trunk is strong enough to lift objects twice its size, but it's also nimble enough to pick up a single leaf or berry or peanut. They're so large, they can't jump, so they walk on their toes. They consume 50 gallons of water and 70,000 calories a day.
Same.
Yeah. They're capable of living in many different environments and will migrate when those living habits no longer suit their needs. And they live in herds and protect one another. So it's like the deeper I went on this, I was like, those characteristics that are important for the livelihood of elephants actually, I feel like, are closely tied to the ones that are highly effective as a creative. So based on those characteristics, here are the 6 components that I believe work in tandem towards producing great content. Number 1 is intelligence. And this one is all about committing to personal growth year over year by focusing and developing on skills. And this is really about developing a foundational skill set and not just skimming over the top of something. It's diving deep into developing a skill set that you can use and build off of. Number 2 is use your trunk. And what I mean by that is to be adaptable and learn to problem solve. Number 3, stay on your toes, which means plan ahead, but prepare to pivot based on information gathered along the way. Number 4, consume tons. Number 5, get uncomfortable and be willing to explore different environments. If you just go back and do the same exact thing every single day and don't push your boundaries, you're going to get stuck. And number 6, cultivate community. Share what you learn and think about how you can set your teammates up for success. And really, this comes back to being accountable for yourself. And this is all just a continuous process and requires time and energy. Nothing happens overnight, and consistently moving is the key. So let's go back and start with number 1, because intelligence is the foundation for growth. Being able to learn and develop a new skill is really important. And so do one of you want to jump in and touch on how you approach your growth habits?
Yeah, I think, you know, growth for me is a little more organic. It's still intentional, but I don't set out at the beginning of the year, each year, being like, I want to do this one thing, or I want to grow in this one certain way or this one certain area. For me, it's really organic based on need. I love finding new needs with my employer, whomever I'm working for at the time, and tackling those needs or championing those needs in a way that helps me grow as an individual while still growing the organization. So for me, that's kind of how I've always approached my growth, is it's been need-based and necessity-based as per the job I'm doing or the job I have at the time.
Yeah, I would agree with that, where, you know, I think when I was at, you know, the university level, just with how many different hats you have to wear, I think I probably had a little clearer path of like what growth looked like. Like, I want to learn this new skill because it'll help me, just because there were so many skills that you had to learn, you know, when I was doing that. And there still are, obviously, with what I'm doing now, but I think I'm a little more focused in what I'm doing and the skills that I'm expected to have, that, you know, I'm not out there feeling like I need to learn just like a full new, you know, software program or something like that. To me, it's a little more like, you know, I would love to learn long form documentary a little bit more. Like, I've AP'd on some docs that we've done here. I've helped out. But I've never been like lead producer on a, you know, 30, 60, 90 doc. I've just been doing features. And so I think that's something that, you know, this year I'd really like to grow in. Like, that's one specific example. And, you know, I remember talking with my boss in my annual review a couple years ago, where like I did a feature that was, you know, basically walking an athlete around his old neighborhood. And, you know, I just didn't like, it was like really the first time at BTN that I had done a feature where I'm out and about in the field and like walking around with a guy and trying to do like a walk and talk type thing. And I just didn't like how it turned out. It was fine, but it wasn't what I had in my head going into the shoot. And I remember that, you know, the next year I was like, okay, I want to get better at that specific type of feature. Like that is a skill that I need to grow. And so it's a lot more like, I don't know, just tightly focused on what I want to do. Like, I just think I have a better idea of like, it's not learn After Effects, you know, it's not this big picture. Like I need to grow this one particular thing. It's more like, how can I get better at what I'm already doing? And to Brock's point, like identify a need within the company or identify a need within like my particular show and, you know, just get better at it so that I'm able to contribute to our show better.
Yeah, that's perfect. Because I think with all the different resources that are out there, you can go onto YouTube, you can do different things and probably get lost in, you know, being overwhelmed because of how many different options there are. So what you just outlined there, I think is perfect, is identifying, you know, both of you outlined as identifying a need and identifying where you feel like you can benefit it and benefit the company at the same time. And that's kind of a great intersection to focus on and then try and set out a plan, because really nothing happens overnight, right? Like you can pick things up over time, and you know, if you focus on it for a longer time period, you're going to have a better base and understanding as opposed to jumping around all over the place. And I think Garrett, what you had mentioned about being adaptable kind of goes to number two, which is use your trunk. So the reason this is called use your trunk is because elephant's trunk is so strong that it can pick up branches or, you know, pick up trees, but it's also nimble enough to be able to pick up a peanut, right? Like it's being adaptable and flexible and making sure that you can do large things, but also small things. It's all problem solving too, and being able to search and, you know, solve your own problems, which I know, I think Brock, you probably deal with quite a bit too. I don't know how you guys go about your search when you're trying to learn something new too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think like you said that some of those things I talked about earlier was kind of about being adaptable, just being, you know, I mean, being out in the field, and I just felt like I wasn't, you know, maybe prepared enough or wasn't able to adapt in a way that I wanted in those like neighborhood walk and talk shoots, and, you know, learned from it and came back and fixed it and learned how to problem solve. I mean, I just think that's the key. But I don't know. I mean, as far as like searching that out and deciding, you know, what that is and how to do that, that's kind of where I always feel like I'm never sure, like, how do I learn to be a better problem solver other than to kind of screw it up, you know?
Well, it's an awareness thing though, right? Like being aware that, you know, that you would like to do it better.
Yeah.
That you would like to approach it and realize that you know, in order to improve, you do have to a lot of times fail first, and then you go, oh, well, you know, this can probably be done better. Let me look into this. How do other people approach it, or how can I learn different parts of the problem to be able to approach it better, and those kinds of things. And the other part of this too is not leaving known problems for others to fix without any sort of communication. Like if you just go, well, I don't know that, not my problem. That kind of leads to, you know, leaving somebody else high and dry if they need it, whether it's a piece of equipment or something along those lines. And then one other thing that we usually talk about, which kind of goes back to the conversation that Brock and I had with Matt Tape, is understanding when to be flexible and how you're going to shoot. And we talk a lot about this with our asset management. Like we only have a finite amount of space. So if we're going out to do a shoot and we shoot everything in 4K and we're shooting hours of footage, that's going to take up a ton of space on our storage. So, you know, just finding a way to make sure that we have everything that we need, and make sure that we're not being overzealous with doing some of that, and understanding the processes that go in place with that as well.
Planning. It's something that we hit on every single episode, but planning.
All right. So the third one, stay on your toes, is obviously one that we all deal with a ton, especially right now during the pandemic. If you both want to touch on an example of where you were kind of thrown through the ringer of having to act quickly on a shoot.
I don't know that I have a specific example that comes to mind. I mean, it just happens all the time with what we do, and maybe less so in the pandemic, just because there's less option to flex. Like, we just have to be a little more drilled down on our end. But I mean, especially like when we're on site on campus for some of our interviews, like the SIDs know we're on campus, and if something happens that we're supposed to have an interview at 11 and all of a sudden like they can't get that interview, and the option is either, you know, I can get you a different guy right now, or we can wait till 5 o'clock and I can get you that other guy, but okay, well, my flight leaves at 4, or like my shooter has to bail at, you know, 3:30 or something like that. Like, you just have to make those decisions in the moment and adjust, and like, okay, well, my question set was kind of planned out for the first guy, but like, what can I adapt? What can I change? I mean, it's just, you know, hey, we were supposed to get you, you know, into the locker room. All of a sudden coach doesn't want to do that. Like, you know, what if we gave you this instead? And yeah, you know, I mean, it's just, you have to, again, it comes back to preparation, but you have to know, on my end anyway, it's knowing my story. If I know my story, I can adapt. Like, I can say, okay, this would still work. I can ask these questions and still get to that same point of this guy as opposed to another way around. Like, it just, being adaptable, is a skill that to me is gained just by, again, preparation. And I hate to hammer that into the ground, but especially for me, it's so important, because that, like, when you know your story, when you know what you're trying to do and what you're trying to get out of, and it's not just interviews. Like, if you're doing headshot shoots or, you know, anything like that, a uniform reveal, if you know what your end concept is going to be, if you know what you're trying to get out of it, it's so much easier to adapt if something goes wrong. You can just say, okay, well, let's do this instead, and we can still get to that same idea. Or like, you know what, this will still work. It just, there's a lot of ways that, I mean, our industry is just never easy. It's never just like, you know, you get this and it's this time. And if you get that, you're lucky as heck. I mean, I feel like you just constantly have to adapt in our shoes, and you either learn to do that, or you fall behind, or you end up with crappy content.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. When I was doing more feature and documentary work, it was more, I would go into something and I'd always have to have the mindset of, what do I do if I don't get this, right? Especially if I'm planning on like an unscripted moment, you know, which is tough. I know you probably do that too, Garrett, where it's like, we're going to go here and there's going to be this reaction to this thing, and it doesn't happen, you know? So
yep.
I think that's really good advice. And I think, you know, just always having a backup plan, or if you have a high profile guest, you know, high profile interview, those people cancel last minute all the time because they're extremely busy, you know? So you have to think about, what do I do if I don't get this interview, or how do I tell this story? So I think it goes back to the old Boy Scout motto of, be prepared. You know, that's such a simple little adage, but if you're prepared for anything, then nothing is surprising.
But I also want to add, though, that like, it's important not to get locked into any one idea either. You know, like, when you're prepared, I mean, there have been times where I've come into a story thinking that like, this is my story, and my interview questions, like, somehow one question leads into a tangent or goes a completely different way. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's super interesting. Like, let me follow up on that. And we end up spending, you know, longer on that in the piece than my initial feature idea. You know, like, you sometimes you have to just be willing to go where the wind takes you as well in this industry. Otherwise, you know, you run the risk of leaving really, really good stuff on the floor just because you had an idea in your head that maybe wasn't the best one after all.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes a ton of sense. So number four is consume tons of content. I know, Garrett, we've talked before about separating entertainment from consumption, and this one's really more about focusing on watching content with the intent of trying to either break it down or pick out things that stand out to you, what speaks to you, and finding areas that you can revisit too for content. So I know we've talked a little bit about inspiration, but I guess, is there anything that stands out to you guys recently that you've watched that you've pulled inspiration from?
Honestly, not as much as there should be, probably. Like, I think this is somewhere I probably can commit to my personal growth, is consuming more content just for growth. I feel like I get so, especially kind of here during our busy season, I get so tired of watching content with this like critical eye, and I still do it, especially when I'm watching sports, but man, like there are sometimes I just want to like put Netflix or Hulu on and turn my brain off, you know, and I probably need to do a better job of actively seeking content of, you know, the style that I'm trying to do, documentary content, feature content, etc. And I think I do watch a decent amount of it, and we, you know, talk about it within our department, but yeah, I feel like, especially when we get into our busy season, I just try and shut my brain off and watch like Fargo or, you know, something, British baking show, something like that.
Oh, that's a good one.
That is a good one, though.
I mean, they do a pretty good job. That's actually pretty well done.
I was thrown off this like past season when I saw one of the hosts was the guy from Old Greg. I was like, wait, what? Yeah, that show's extremely well done.
I thought you were going to say Spice Adams.
Oh, yeah. I was a little disappointed Mary Carey didn't come over with the Netflix version. Mary Berry. Sorry. My apologies. Great British Baking Show.
Oh, fans. Listen, if we turn this into a Great British Baking Show podcast, I would not be upset about that either. I am very into that show. Disturbingly so.
I haven't watched that in a little bit, but it's great. We've covered Cars. We've covered British Baking Show. Yeah. Not sure what's next.
I could segue all this background back to Cars if you really want. So I just watched the American Barbecue version made by the same people who make Great British Baking Show. Same people. But one of the hosts of it is the host of that really bad American Top Gear spinoff. I'm pretty sure it's him, which then just makes me think about the British Top Gear, which is the really, really good one, which actually early in my career, I stole a lot of editing techniques from the original Top Gear because their editors were so good. And it's one of the first times I learned how to do a gradient sky grade, because all their grades would just have like the sky be like orange or teal or something, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh, how'd they do that? And it's like, oh, well, it's just like an adjustment layer with like a grade on it just in the sky. But yeah, you can, I think, roundabout way of saying, you can kind of pull inspiration from any type of programming and apply it to your work.
Yeah, no, that's perfect, because, you know, it just getting outside of the general loops that you usually consume. So for me, I go on Vimeo and I just follow people. If I see something that they do that I really like, I follow them so that when they post a new piece of content or when they like a video, then it usually populates in my feed. So I don't have to go out searching all the time. A lot of times when I log in, I'll just scroll through, you know, people you follow who have liked or uploaded content, and I'll get alerts that way. And then I go through and just keep adding more and more people. If, if they like a video by someone, then I click on their page and I go through it. I'm like, is this something that, where I feel like the content that they're producing is something that I like and that I will follow, then I'll follow them, and it just grows over time, and you start to get consistent loops that you can visit back to. So that kind of speaks to the next one, which is Migrate, which is number five. And it's called Migrate because finding loops that you can revisit, just like you guys were talking about, it all kind of blends together, but getting outside of the typical production workflow that you usually follow, because we're in this so much day to day. We've talked before about how it can become an echo chamber, right? So finding a way to bring in some of your influences outside of that, for me, that's motion graphics and animation and how they approach different projects to and trying to bring that in and infusing that with our brand. And I usually say spending a half hour a day gets a small chunk. Maybe you spend 10 minutes a day doing it. It's a small chunk that really adds up over time. It's a compound thing, not necessarily a all at once kind of thing.
What exactly do you mean by that? Maybe I'm just not quite understanding exactly what you're trying to say.
Yeah, for migrating, it's about, you know, putting yourself in different situations, putting yourself in different areas so that you can adapt. It all kind of goes back to adapting and having different surroundings so that you can, ultimately learn how to adapt into new scenarios, but also understanding that if you move on from that and you end up in a similar situation or a similar environment, that you can take and apply what you've learned from previous environments into the current one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, Brock's going to have maybe a similar answer to me here, but like I feel like the work that I was doing in college athletics and the work that I'm doing now are two very different jobs. And I feel like Brock probably feels that the Notre Dame work and the work he's doing now are two very different jobs as well. And for me, that's kind of how I approach it, where like, you know, coming into the TV world, I did not, like, I worked at ESPN right out of school, but, you know, it wasn't in like a direct production role where I was very hands-on in the process like I am now. I was entry level at ESPN. And so, you know, kind of getting into this now, like, creating content at a university and at a college is such a different mindset than linear television. And I really feel like I was able to bring some of that with me, you know, just as far as we work with schools a lot. So like knowing, you know, how to communicate with people at the schools, knowing what kind of content they were already producing to ask for. And just like kind of this idea of, well, we did this with less at Minnesota. Like, what if we tried it, you know, that way, but with like a little more resources? And like, you know, cause at the university level, I felt like we had to be super adaptable to get stuff done. I mean, just based on budget and equipment restrictions, et cetera. Whereas, you know, it's much more resourced at Big Ten Network. And so to kind of have that flexibility already built into me and have that, you know, kind of college way of thinking of, I mean, even just like using some of the DSLRs for that cinematic, I mean, the stuff that we were talking about earlier with, you know, Fox's, you know, linear presentation of that Washington football team game was like, I mean, that's stuff that you're seeing all the time in at the university level for, you know, post game highlights and that stuff for, you know, ENG type stuff, usually not as much live, but like you're seeing stuff from that college model make its way kind of a little more into the mainstream. And so I think that having that experience for me and being able to bring that to Big Ten Network and this features unit, you know, gave me a really good perspective and, you know, to the same point, like having this experience now makes me better. If I ever go back to college, like I've worked on like, you know, features that we dedicate a lot of time to and that have to be really good and well done. And, you know, I think I could bring a lot of that back to the college environment with me. I just think like having that flexibility of skills. And again, I think Brock will probably speak to very similar ideas where, you know, he went from creating content and directing shows and stuff to building out control rooms that, you know, I think having both sets of those skills for him is, you know, I don't want to speak for him. I guess Brock, you can speak to it.
Yeah. I mean, I completely, you know, I hesitate to call it a career change, but it's definitely adjacent to a career change. But I always say, you know, everything I've done in the past has helped me bring me to the place I am now. And everything I've done in the past, you know, helps inform and make me better at what I do now. So a lot of what I, you know, did on the feature side, a lot of what I did on the live side, you know, only helps further help me in my current job and situation. Because when I sit down with a, you know, show director or producer and they're building out their show and they want to know what's where, you know, I can kind of speak to that because I've done it in the past. You know, a content creator is sitting there in Media Encoder and wants to know the best way to get their footage, you know, onto the clip player, the replay machine, the truck or in the control room, right? Like I've done all that, right? Nothing about it is hypothetical, right? So that's why I really like the idea of doing as much as possible and learning it, because you never know where that skill you learned is going to help you in the future. Whether that's, again, we just saw this bridge. We go back to the beginning of the show. You're bridging a mirrorless full frame cinema camera into a live broadcast environment, right? If you don't know a little bit about that full frame cinema camera and a little bit about broadcast, you're not going to understand what the other are expecting, right? Or how things normally operate, or vice versa, right? And there's going to be some assumptions made. Whereas if, you know, that engineer who set up that show, I'm totally speculating, was a shooter in a past life and had maybe shot on a mirrorless or a DSLR or a cinema camera before, they're going to have an understanding. Or if that operator who ran that camera, who was very familiar with it, had ran like a broadcast Steadicam before, right? You can bridge those worlds. So I think, you know, migrating and getting out of your comfort zone is extremely important, because there, in my opinion, there's nothing negative that can come from it.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, the conversations that we've had in the episodes, hopefully you listen to ones, even if you don't necessarily feel like they fit your style right now, because it could open up a new gap or an interest there that you decide you want to explore, or you hadn't thought of how that plays into what you're doing right now. And, you know, exploring that then kind of opens the doors to a whole different world that you can continue to evolve in as well. So the last one, number six, is compete to cultivate community. And in Latin, compete means strive together. And ultimately, this one is about taking care of yourself, taking care of your duties, so that no one else has to pick up your slack. And that goes from, you know, starting your career to managing or doing anything in between. If you tackle what you need to tackle and take care of what you need to take care of, that means if you take out equipment and you come back and you don't put it in the right spot, someone else loses out, or someone else, you know, has to deal with the pains of that, potentially, of not being able to find the equipment. And I think that, you know, being organized and how you lay out, you know, Garrett talked about preparation earlier, that it all kind of speaks to this. So it's really about focusing on what you can control and taking care of what you need to take care of.
Yeah. I mean, it's not much more complicated than that. Like, I don't think there's a lot I can add that you didn't already say. It's just do what you're supposed to do and take care of other people, help them grow, help them learn. You know, every time you build someone else up, there's a pretty good chance that you're helping yourself out down the road. Like when you're working departmentally, if you can show someone else how to do something, it's either going to take work off you, or it's going to make them better to help their part of whatever the team is doing better. And that reflects better on you in the long run. So, you know, even if it's a completely selfish motive, which ideally it wouldn't be, but just make people better, because it'll help you down the road.
So I'll run down the list one more time. If you want to jot it down, it's number one is intelligence, about committing to personal growth year over year. Number two is use your trunk, basically be adaptable and creative and how you create, and make sure that you problem solve, use Google, do what you have to do to figure out a problem if you come up on something you don't know. Three is stay on your toes. It's be curious and explore and get uncomfortable. Number four is consume tons of content. Make sure you have some time to be able to explore and see what other people are doing, especially outside of your current role. Number five is migrate. Make sure that you find yourself in different environments to make sure that you can adapt a little bit quicker and take what you've learned and carry it on, you know, bring it with you. And number six is compete to cultivate community, and make sure you take care of everything that you have to take care of so nobody has to pick up your slack. Is there anything else that you guys want to touch on? Should we wrap this back up and bring it back to cars or the British baking show or anything in between there? I feel like this was or Washington football shot from Fox. I feel like this was a pretty flowing episode.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things we touched on, but
I would love to see a version of the Great British Baking Show with members of the Washington football team competing, all shot on an A7 R3.
Building cars.
Dang it, I forgot one. Yeah, there you go.
Come on, man.
So the cakes would be cars.
Yeah, the cakes are cars.
There you go.
Still it. Have to use all the same tools, mixers and.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they had to use the same tools as mechanics. Like you had to make a cake with a.
Oh, there you go. Then maybe that's the hybrid.
I think we should be producers for the British Baking Show now.
There you go.
Yeah, we've clearly reached our peak at producing this podcast. So let's keep trying to grow. I don't think we can get any better.
Oh, all right. Well, that was a fun one today.
Giddy up.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's fun.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.